where we had already provided in-person testimony, and we felt that our, we had been represented and we simply submitted written testimony to that.
Okay, we're gonna move on to quite a list there, I think.
I have just two questions. One is, what did the state get for grabbing this? I mean, we sold our tollway system to a private group. What was given? Did the state get any money for saying okay?
No, the cities did. The municipalities
allowed. The cities got money for it?
The municipalities had the right to get a 5% of the gross revenue receipts for use of the public right-of-way from this. In addition, they were able to levy a 1% fee on our gross revenue receipts for the support of public education and government programming. I believe Evanston, in order to, for the cities to reap those benefits, they had to pass separate ordinances after the passage of the state law. And I believe Evanston passed both fees. So that they'll be getting 6% of our gross revenue receipts off of the video product that we sell in Evanston.
The other question was, if a person's property is devalued by having this box in front of their house, do they get a break on their state taxes?
I don't, I'm not an assessor, so I can't speak to that.
Dan?
Yeah. I was a little confused about something, your initial presentation. I have, I get cable TV and I have internet access. In cable, I have hundreds of channels, and the internet access and cable TV services I get are very good from the local provider. Now, as far as I can tell, all this stuff comes from a wire that's strung out to a telephone pole in my alley. And on that telephone pole is some little device. I don't quite know what it does. But, so I don't quite understand, what are these people doing different to provide that service than you're doing?
These people being other companies?
Well, that, whoever provides all this
Comcast
to my house without having a big box in my neighborhood, as far as I can tell. They just have something on a telephone pole.
I don't work for Comcast. I can't speak to their technology.
But why?
But I can tell you why we did it the way we did it, is because we already have a line into your home, and we wanted to use that existing telephone line that we already have. Not, maybe not your home, but our customers' homes.
Okay, so I just want to say that, so there's other technology that would have been less intrusive that already exists, because that's how I get my internet service and cable service. I just wanted to make that point. That you could have gone this other way and it wouldn't have bothered anybody.
We personally felt that the way that cable is deployed is a technology that has too many limitations on the ability to provide the service, and we're able to provide more product and more bandwidth over our way we deliver it and using our existing infrastructure. If we were to do anything differently, we would be required to put in a whole new line into your home, which would require us to put in either a new aerial drop or bury a new phone line into your house, which would be equally disruptive. Maybe not to the point of having a box there, but would also
try me.
Disrupt
try me on that one. see what they say.
Let me just, in reference to that question, because I think this is a question a lot of us have. We have four websites here, and these sheets are on the back. You can pick them up on your way out. These articles basically address why other telecommunications companies can deliver the same service without massive boxes. These references were sent by the IT director of the city of Geneva, who lobbied during 2007 with you, Mitchell, and with others, with Scott, in Springfield, and he's very knowledgeable. He sent these to us today to share with you. So please pick them up. You're gonna have to type these in. But these will explain to you how Verizon delivers the same service at a great cost. So, you know, I think what I'm hearing is that it's too expensive. It was a decision by AT&T to save money.
More than double, in fact.
It's about maximizing corporate profit. So,
Rob, you're next.
Okay, apologize for my cat calling and everything. I'm not the happiest guy in the room. But I have a couple of questions. I'm Rob Broom. I'm the poster boy.
Okay.
Who in your company, I know how companies work. I used to work for IBM. And who has bonuses based on hitting rollout targets in your company? Can you share that with me?
I don't know if anyone.
You don't have one?
No, I don't.
Really?
No.
Nobody at AT&T does?
No, not that I know of. That's not how our compensation structure is
Interesting. I, you know, if you need help with that, I could. We had a wonderful incentive program like that. Now, it occurs to me, listening to about the copper, which, how long has the copper been in the ground?
Well, I mean, it varies from location to location.
Say Evanston average.
I'm sure there's copper that's been there for, well, I don't know if it's about 100 years, but for many decades.
Okay. And so it goes, it doesn't just go to that AT&T box that's down our block. It goes farther, doesn't it? Doesn't copper have to go somewhere else? I mean, I used to use that to dial in and get to the internet, so I know it doesn't just stop in my neighborhood.
It depends on where you live today. We do have a lot of fiber already. In fact, Evanston's probably one of our most fiber-rich cities already, where we have a lot of fiber already going directly to those cross-connect boxes today. In some instances where we put a V-Rad cabinet in, we have to bring the fiber in using the existing conduit that we already have under the streets.
I guess my question is that I have probably copper to the central office from my house, I would imagine.
I couldn't get
a high-speed DSL line.
Can you get it today?
No, and so I'm assuming that I'm more than, what, 5,000 feet. My question is this. Why couldn't the fiber go to the central office? What's wrong with doing it that way?
I don't think you're understanding what I'm saying. We already have fiber from our central office, which is downtown on Davis Street, that goes already to all of many of the the cross-connect boxes that already exist, and that's been that way for many years here in Evanston. Again, Evanston has probably one of our richest fiber communities.
Okay, but what is the purpose? Why does this fiber to the neighborhood have to come so close, then jump to copper? Why couldn't it jump to copper back in the central office?
Because the traveling over copper is a distance-sensitive technology.
So the copper's not as advanced.
The copper,
it's kind of old.
Well, the copper is perfectly fine with delivering the infrastructure, delivering the bandwidth that we want with the electronic equipment, but it's distance-limited. So the further away you are from the technology in the central office,
it's
reduction in bandwidth.
Perfectly fine, but it's not fine if it's more than, what, 1,800 feet from a house?
I don't understand what question you're asking. It's
well, I guess the point I'm making, it seems like you guys have had copper in the ground 100 years mm-hmm. and have failed to exploit that advantage. Now, the competition's heating up. Fios has phenomenal adoption rates in the communities where it's at. It's one of the fastest adopted technology products in history, even though it's more expensive. They're making bundles of money on Fios. It seems to me that because copper was left in the ground, it was, excuse my crunch, it was crappy internet service when I had high speed, because if it rained a little, it went away for a day or two. And the guy would come out and he would say, I'm talking and I expect you not to interrupt me now.
Oh, I'm sorry, I was trying to understand.
I'm talking and I would rather not be interrupted.
Okay, I'm just trying to understand if you had DSL service or not.
I did, and it would die.
Okay, I thought you told me you
and I canceled it. They told me I couldn't get it after I had it. This was AT&T customer service. So, because the lack of capability of the copper means you have to pull the fiber in close, because the copper is ancient, and it can't carry this kind of bandwidth very far. So because you haven't invested in this infrastructure, it's been sitting there for 100 years, we get these in our neighborhoods, and it's cheap because it seems like you're externalizing your costs. I don't know if you've had micro econ.
I have.
You're externalizing the cost to the community by these utilitarian, not pretty boxes that are probably gonna shave $20,000 off their house. It's sitting right outside my picture window. I hate to think what it's gonna do to my house. You've externalized a bundle of costs onto me. That's not a question, it's a statement. But that's how you're doing it. Because you fail to invest, because you're not used to competition. AT&T has been a monopoly for 100 years. And suddenly you woke up and said, oh God, these other guys have built networks that are pretty damn good. Verizon's got fiber to my house, and I hate to compare the internet access that I could get with Fios to this. It doesn't even begin to compare.
we have Sharon Hess.
Again, I apologize, I'm just not that happy.
And I know you probably have more questions, and we're thinking, if we're really gonna get through this agenda, we're gonna have to limit it to one question per person. Sharon, you gotta keep going.
Peter?
Yeah, this is actually a follow-up question, Bob touched on it.
Do people stand when they ask their questions, so we could all hear them?
Okay, this is a question, that has already been touched upon, but the idea of externalizing your costs. And if you could frame this, and maybe you can, what is your capital budget for the city of Evanston in this project? What revenues are you planning to throw off on an annual basis? Maybe the city of Evanston can add, can answer what they expect their annual take to be. And in terms of the externalized cost, because there is a subsidy paid for by the affected homeowners in terms of depreciation of property values, is there some way AT&T would consider making those homeowners whole?
The first question is, we don't keep records on a municipal basis as far as capital budgets go. Mostly because we don't design, our network isn't designed on a city basis. So for instance, the city of Evanston has actually served out of a number of different wire centers that, one that's in Chicago, one that's in Wilmette, one that's in Skokie. So we don't keep data on a citywide basis. I have seen no proof of any kind of devaluation of home values. So I know of no study that's been done, or no empirical evidence that is
behind you. Put one at your house.
I'm having one put it near my house.
No, no, okay, but if evidence can be accumulated to show depreciation on the value, would AT&T consider making those homeowners whole?
No, that's not something that we would consider.
Because it is a cost. Your services are now being subsidized by many homeowners, probably 500 homeowners in the city of Evanston.
We place our infrastructure on land that has been set aside by the state government and the city of Evanston and cities across the state that is set aside for the use of providing public infrastructure, including all the utilities have access to that public right-of-way. We pay a fee to the city and to the state for the purpose of putting in our telecommunications infrastructure. And when you buy property, you know the existence of public utility easements and public right-of-way that is set aside for that purpose. So I can't speak to a hypothetical, but right now there's no data to show that there is any loss of and that's not something that AT&T has considered to date.
Joan?
Well, first of all, shame on you for, because you know that there is a loss of property value in one of these cases and people are primarily concerned. So I think we need to address that issue.
Please speak up.
I have an email from Elizabeth Coulson, who is our state representative, whom I contacted about this issue, and her chief of staff, Eric Miller, sent me a list of requirements. I don't know if this sounds familiar to you, and if this is not a legislation question, you can correct me. But this, I was told, was the legislation that the state legislature passed to allow AT&T to do this installation of the boxes. Its number is PA95-9, and it sets forth the following regulations for equipment that is placed within public right-of-ways. One of those requirements is that it must cause only minimal interference with use of streets, alleys, and other public ways, and minimal impact on property owners. Now, I do not understand how these boxes cause minimal impact on property owners, especially when there is technology in boxes that are less intrusive. Another requirement is that you must use the smallest suitable equipment enclosures, power pedestals, and cabinets then in use by the holder. This does not mean in use, you know, the equipment that you have in place, but that you have in use somewhere in the United States, and you use technology that is less intrusive in other parts of our country. So you should be using that here. So I want to know how you can say that you are not violating at least these two regulations in the legislation.
I believe we are firmly abiding by both of those. The law also states that the municipalities, we have to follow the local ordinances of the municipalities, and they are the actual grantors of the permit to build the building infrastructure. The statement on the smallest possible cabinet in use by the holder We are using the same technology all across the country, and we use the, we are indeed using the smallest boxes that we have possible to use for this technology, which is the ALP-248. The only time we would use a bigger box is if the density of the neighborhood requires us to have a bigger box in order to serve that entire neighborhood, in which case we'll use either the ALP-448 or the 52E box, which is slightly larger, by about 12 inches tall. So I believe that we are firmly abiding by both the state law and by all local ordinances here in the city of Evanston.
So you'll go on record as saying that there is, you do not use smaller equipment anywhere else in the country?
We do not use smaller equipment for the provisioning of the video-ready access devices anywhere else in the country, no.
Okay. And then how do you address the fact that this, I mean, you say this is minimal impact on property owners. You can envision no other scenario in which there would be less impact on property owners and you could deliver the same service.
No, I cannot.
Donald?
Hello. I actually have a question for our city people. Oh, that's after?
5 minutes. We've got five more minutes with AT&T. So you're on the top of that.
No, I have a question for them as well.
Okay.
I had more, but I'll limit it to one. So how long is the lease you have on the rights of way, and what happens when that lease ends?
There is no lease per se. We have grant the use of the right of way is granted through state law in perpetuity.
In perpetuity. So we have no way to take that back from you.
Steve?
Good deal.
Yeah, good for us.
Hi, I'm Steve Barbaugh, the Executive Director of the Evanston Community Media Center. It's good to see you guys. Barbara Popovich's name came up, and the reason I'm here tonight is, again, just for the folks in Evanston who aren't aware, the Community Media Center provides the cable access channels in Evanston. So this is your Channel 6, your public access, 16, the city access, 18, the high school, 19, for District 65. Our issue is that the product that's on UVerse is being offered as a Channel 99 package, meaning an application that would put all four of our channels into a menu-driven system, wouldn't be covered by the programming guide, wouldn't be something you could program your DVR to do or watch, and frankly, it takes time to go through the menus to get the channels, and with thousands of channels, people aren't going to do it. Basically, we're going to Video Siberia. We don't like that place very much. And it's a little different than with the boxes, because in our case, we feel that the state law here is in question, and that's why Barbara was in Washington. And just so you know, the law says companies operating under Illinois cable and video franchise law of 2007 shall provide subscribers public educational and governmental access channel capacity and equivalent visual and audio quality and equivalent functionality for the viewing perspective of the subscriber to that of commercial channels carried on the basic cable or video service offering. And we can go back and forth on this. I think we both think that we're on opposing viewpoints of where that law stands. But we need, obviously, the support of the community. If you also believe that these channels should have their own home and continue to be an asset to the community, something that we've served over 20 years.
Actually, it takes exactly 1 minute and 5 seconds to go to channel 99 and to get to the public access channel. Somebody's actually taped it. There's a YouTube.
I would like to, since you brought that point up, that YouTube tape that you're referring to is actually outdated. We've made two updates to our PEG delivery system since then and cut that delivery time off more than in half. So as far as the public, the delivery system that we use for public education government channels, the way we deliver the PEG channels, it gives you the ability to watch all of the PEG programming throughout the Chicago market. So if you want to watch Barb Popovich's programming on CAN TV, you can now do that here in Evanston. We'll once we get her stations up on the air. But we're in the process of working with the city of Chicago and with a number of cities right now. But you'll have the ability to see Skokie's, you'll have the ability to see Wilmette, you'll have the ability to see other cities' public education and government programming as well. So on that point, so if you have children that go to Evanston Township High School and they're playing Batavia in football, and Batavia broadcasts their games on the local PEG channel and you can't make it to the game, you still have the ability to pull up Batavia's local access channel from here in Evanston and to watch that football game based on the technology we're using.
Hi, how are you? I just want to make a comment and possibly a question. So what you're describing is, well, I just want to say that I'm speaking as a consumer, because I presently have, you know, we have Comcast and property and their home and devaluing the property. And now it sounds like they're going to take the channel that we have, channel 6, channel 19, and channel 16, and basically squeeze that out also. So to me, it sounds like they're not really a human friendly company.
That's very well said.
And as much as I hate Comcast, and I hate Comcast, I absolutely would boycott your company just for the mere fact that I will lose Channel 6 and Channel 19. I think that, you know, as you're sort of feeling here, Evanston has a strong community base. And just, you know, if you could just spare those channels, I think that would be just a great notion that you are for the community. And, you know, I think you should think about that.
Thank you.
Energy? One of the boxes is about, I guess, to be installed on our parkway. And I have just a couple questions. One is that air conditioner going be outside my bedroom window making noise throughout the months?
Yeah, they're
making
noise.
The box is, but okay. the cooling unit does run.
I am not going to like that. We are willing to help you find another spot on our property, on our own property, not just on the parkway and the city property, if you would just work with us.
Ooh,
we could do it then.
We'd be happy to do it.
Okay, well, I'll be in touch.
Okay.
And then the other thing is, can you do whatever you want? I mean, if you want to make that box 20 feet high, can you do that? I mean, does the city of Evanston have anything to say about limits on this, or are you, you know, able to do whatever you want at your own discretion?
No, we're not able to do whatever we want at our own discretion. In fact, we cannot place a box anywhere in the city of Evanston without a permit from the city of Evanston. We are required to use the smallest box that is available for that technology, which we are doing. So even if we wanted to use a 20-foot box in a location, the mere fact that we have one that's 4 foot tall requires us to use the 4 foot tall box, and the application with a 4 foot tall box is what's needed. So we don't have the ability just to unilaterally go wherever we want. We have to work hand in hand with the local ordinances that you have on the books, which means that, and we've spent a great deal of time working with the city to try and find the most aesthetically pleasing, and I will be the first to admit that it's not going to appease everyone, but I can tell you we have spent a great deal of time, hundreds of hours of time investigating the best spot possible given the technological parameters that we have in each location.
Mayor Beth?
Well, I was going to ask a different question, but I have to address first saying, when you negotiate with me on private property, I met with Mr. Mitek and Julie Hamos and members of the Quaker Church. And Mr. Mitek, you said to me that you would not, AT&T would not be willing to negotiate with private property owners because they expected that box to be there a very long time. This property changed over. They did not want to renegotiate that lease on the property.
I definitely do not recall saying that.
I have it in my notes.
Well, let me comment on our policy on that. Obviously, if a box has already been placed, the pad's already been poured, then the horse is out of the barn on that issue. But if there are locations that we haven't built yet, and we can come to some quick resolution, but keep in mind, even if you're willing to give us a parcel of your land that we could use, we have to have access to that land 24 hours a day. We have to have access to that box 24 hours a day. You will have personnel from our company coming to that box, possibly 24 hours a day if there's an emergency. So we want to make sure that you understand that we would need to have access to that box as well. We're happy to sit down if we can come to quick resolution to find a place that serves your needs and ours and the city's needs. If the city, you know, I've already spoken with the city about this, we're willing to sit down and talk with that. But the key here has to be two things. We have to reach quick resolution. We have standard easement language that we could provide, and we want to be able to come in and we already have permitted locations in the city of Evanston for, I think, 99 of the boxes that we've put in applications for. We're willing to take another look at any of those locations as long as we can do it very quickly in order to meet our goals of deploying this as quickly as possible.
That's not what I was told.
and I, that's why I have to rebut this. I was told that that box could be there for 100 years because I asked, if technology changes, can that box be moved? And you said.
No, wait, no, I said, if technology changes, will we remove that box and we will not?
That's what you said. AT&T does not move boxes, quote unquote, from Mr. Mitek.
When they're in place.
Wait, once the box is in place, we do not move boxes.
The Quaker Church was not notified that this box was going in, so there was no way that they could question the location of this box, and they were willing to place it on their property, which came up in the meeting with Mr. Mitek. And Mr. Mitek's response was, AT&T is not going to do easements because they plan on them being there for a very long time, and they're not going to move the box. That is what was said and what has happened.
You're incorrect.
One. Julie Hamels can back me up on that.
Fine. And
let's just leave it at that. We will agree or disagree.
Jim Hughes?
This question is about the combined technology. Since a lot of the new services are going to stay on copper all the way to the house, what's your plan for investing in it? Because it's going to be a lot more sensitive to downtime. What is your plan? Have you increased your budget to maintain the copper?
Part of the process of preparing the network for this upgrade is that we do what's called F2 line conditioning, the line from the copper or from the cross-connect box to the house. We've already begun doing that F2 line conditioning throughout Evanston.
So you are visiting those lines, you are working on them.
What we're doing is we're working in the cross-connect box. So over time, because it takes very little bandwidth to carry voice communication over that copper pair, through time we've put repeaters, splitters, different things on our copper network to extend the reach to more homes. When we go in and condition the network to prepare for U-verse, we strip all of those coils, repeaters, splitters off, and each home has a dedicated copper pair to their home and only to their home. They're not sharing it with anyone else.
So you would do that and not put fiber?
We're already doing that, yes.
What about maintaining that network?
Well, we've always.
What kind of investment do you have to maintain the copper?
We spend roughly $1 billion a year in Illinois.
In Evanston.
We don't keep data on individual cities, but we spend about $1 billion a year just maintaining our copper network every year.
What about capacity on these existing systems? What happens when you need more capacity? The ones you're putting in now.
Capacity for what?
The boxes you're putting in.
The boxes,
will you add to those boxes? Will you make them bigger?
No, the boxes are being built to match the service area of the distribution area of the cross-connect box. So if the cross-connect box currently serves 400 customers, we put in a box that can serve 400 video customers as well. Again, the services that are offered aren't just the video services, but high-speed internet and voice services are going to be offered as well. So every phone line is reconditioned and spliced into the new box, whether you order the service from us or not.
So if I have a condo go in the 250 units, I might see a new box?
Well, any new development that gets built will likely require new infrastructure, and we always work with developers on that in the early stages to put in the proper infrastructure to serve the property that they're building or developing.
But those will have to be buried, right, because of the regs in Evanston, if
no.
It's a planned development?
Not necessarily, no.
No, it says they have to. If it's part of a planned development, they have to be buried.
I don't know what all the regulations are in the city of Evanston, but we build, anytime a new development goes in and it needs infrastructure, we'll of course abide by the local ordinances.
Maybe the city can address that when we're about to move to the city.
We have one more question from Scott, and then we're going to move to the city.
Hi, my name is Scott Sanders. I work with Mitchell in Chicago Media Action. I've been an activist on various media issues in the Chicago area for over 20 years. And this issue brought me out here back to Evanston, where I sort of began my activism. I was quite involved in the creation of the cable system here and was on the Cable Commission. I was named by the mayor to the first board of the Community Media Center. And let me assure you that, especially if you start getting into areas of free speech or public access channels, if you start messing with those in Evanston, look out, okay? Because you're going to have a huge, if you think this is a lot of people, look out. In fact, just as a frame of reference, back then, because of a lot of people were concerned about these kind of local issues involving cable, do you know what the cable rate was back then? Do you know the history here?
Yeah.
It was $2, okay? And $4.50, but there was a summer, I believe, where the special was $2. I don't know if anyone remembers that, but I helped do that, okay? And Steve Bartlebaugh is an old friend, and please listen to him, because he's representing all the people that volunteer here and the people that view those programs. This is a special community. It likes its access. That's why it was spun off into a not-for-profit organization. So don't play with that. I'm so happy to see everyone out here. It's just nice to see this many people and a public meeting involving cable. Don't give up. This gets very frustrating, folks. Just don't give up, and we'll see what happens. I really wanted to just speak a little bit about the word competition, because I just don't believe there ever has been competition, and probably under the current circumstances, probably never will be competition for cable in terms of rates. I did a little investigating on this issue locally. You don't have to go far to answer this question and to shed some light on it. Just go over to Skokie. They were one of the few communities that had two cable companies early on. And if you call the cable office there and ask them, how do the packages and the rates compare now that they have two companies? Well, my, I believe they told me it was a 42-cent difference on a, I think, an 89.95 package. You get a couple different channels here and there. So if you go, you check in, same thing in Chicago, I'm sorry. There is no competition. The rates, this is all a hoax, okay? You're coming in here, and nothing is going to change. The rates aren't going to go down, and there's not going to be competition.
They're higher than Comcast.
Yeah, it's going to be higher, okay, if anything. So lastly, maybe you could try to address the competition issue. If you've studied the issue at all, go back to the first state franchise and compare the rates there in Texas, I believe, and check California. These are not competitive situations. This is just a falsehood, okay? So to me, this whole thing with the boxes is pointless, because you're not offering anything special. You're not beating any price, and I don't even know why you're here.
Thank you for watching.